Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying tale is about this archaeologist and his crew in the country of Egypt, where they discover something remarkable and horrifying. Brandon, this is for you. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. I've always thought that the past was never content to stay in the past. It may not be widely spoken about, but I'm not content to sit quietly in books or in museum exhibits. When it wants to, it reaches out and grabs you. The only question is what happens next. Sometimes history lets you go, while other times you will feel its fingers tightening their grip. I felt it reach out and grab me on the Thornton expedition in Egypt. We were thrilled when we first found the tomb. When probing the area for about a month, our scanning equipment revealed there was a labyrinth of solid surfaces located deep under the desert surface. So we set out to find whatever it was, no matter how much time or money it took. It took a while, but our team of diggers eventually uncovered the entrance. Then they sent in drones and other equipment to make sure the site was physically sound and wouldn't cave in if people stepped inside. Once this was completed, I arrived on site as the dig supervisor. Stepping around mounds of sifted sand, segments of broken walls that had only recently been unearthed, huge bits of digging equipment, and various makeshift buildings dotting the landscape, I felt the earth declining under my feet at an angle as I moved closer towards where my team was gathered. The sand may have been shrinking away, but my excitement was growing with each step. This was the moment you dream about as an archaeologist. "Really, Galloway?" Victor, the site manager, greeted me the moment I was in earshot. Like the others gathered around, he was decked out in a hard hat and other protective gear. There was no telling how much more the tomb structure was covered in sand. The team had unearthed the entrance. But a tomb is a lot like an iceberg or anthill. What you see is only a fraction of what's truly there. We all knew so far that the tomb was massive, and was a pyramid at one point, but the top had been weathered away over the centuries. "Let's do it." As soon as I was outfitted with the right gear, the team began chiseling away at what looked to be the tomb's entrance. Jim Cromwell, our expedition's main photographer, stood poised slightly behind us to capture the moment. We stepped into the entrance. The intense heat from the desert was practically radiating off us. It was immediately apparent that the tomb was well made because the heat and the sun failed to penetrate the structure. It was actually somewhat chilly inside. The deeper inside we went, the more it felt like we were leaving the outside world behind. When the entrance faded away behind us, the first thing our flashlights reached were the two massive statues of Anubis made entirely out of black onyx. The smooth stone gleamed slightly from the artificial light. The closer we got to the entrance they were flanking, the more it made the statues loom out of the darkness like giants. If I had to guess, I'd say they were nearly 8 feet tall. Something major was here. I took my time looking around what once had been a pyramid. No matter how many times I set foot in an ancient tomb, I never lose the sense of awe I get when taking in the stone walls and fuzzy humidity. I hope I never do. This was the ultimate time capsule, endless hallways carved into massive stone blocks, intricate hieroglyphics everywhere you looked, and the occasional statue keeping watch on you as you made your way through the corridors. The excitement inside me was ready to burst as the crew walked through the main passageway. After about 10 minutes, we emerged into a cavernous antechamber that was shrouded in darkness. But with my flashlight, I could still see that the walls were covered by hieroglyphics from floor to ceiling.
"Can we get some lights in here?"
I called out. The crew was on it, as within minutes, they were setting up massive industrial lamps that illuminated the words and images sweeping across the walls. Whoever said if these walls could talk had never been here. These walls didn't just talk, they told stories. After a good look around, we went back out to our base for refreshments and rest. One of the first things you learn is how quickly you could go dehydrated working out in the desert. Since it was now the hottest time of the day, it was time to relax until the sun went down. Despite digging in what was ostensibly the cooler season in Egypt, we got stuck in the middle of a record heat wave. Lucky us. I carefully stepped around the digging equipment, numerous tools, and tarps securing the site we had been digging around for nearly a week before I climbed the 3 steps of the trailer and opened the door. A cold wave of air conditioning greeted me before I grabbed a bottle of water from the fridge next to the sink and took a seat on the leather couch. Looking around me at the state-of-the-art motor couch, I couldn't help but think how lucky we were. Elliot Thornton, our patron, had certainly spared no expense for our expedition. Everywhere you looked confirmed that we had the best equipment, the best experts, and the best of everything. Good thing, too, because trying to make an expedition like this work on a tight budget is a recipe for disaster. Thornton spent his younger years accumulating a fortune, and discovered by middle age he had more money than he knew what to do with. So he decided why not add a little adventure to his life. I could tell he was living vicariously through us, but that was his prerogative. We all have our little daydreams. Some of us just have more chance to act them out than others. While I sipped on my water before I left for the day, I thought about what we had uncovered. When you're spending time in a climate-controlled office somewhere in London, New York, or elsewhere, it's easy to forget how old the world is, and how young modern cities truly are. But out here, the beginning of civilization doesn't seem quite so distant. The following day, we went back into the site, and began cataloging and exploring in detail. It was just as chilly inside as it was the day before. Since I made sure to dress accordingly, it wasn't an issue. But once we were halfway through the main corridor, the sound of someone screaming suddenly filled the air. It wasn't a startled cry of someone getting spooked. This was full-throated, top of the lungs, shrieking in agony. I flinched and frantically looked around for the source of the screaming. But I was shocked to see some of the other crew members looking at me with total uncertainty.
"Are you okay, Richard?"
Jim Cromwell asked me, concern plastered all over his face.
"Didn't you hear that?"
"Hear what?"
Jim's concerned expression morphed into one of confusion.
"The scream."
"What scream?"
"The scream that just happened. It was one of the worst noises I have ever heard."
"Richard, I didn't hear a scream, but I heard someone laughing."
Victor nervously volunteered as he stepped forward to look at me.
"It was the most unfunny laugh I have ever heard. Cold and heartless, like something you would hear from a villain in a movie. I thought I was just imagining it, but now I'm not so sure."
"I didn't hear anything,"
Jim said as the other crew members silently exchanged concerned looks.
I didn't imagine it, and neither did Victor. We all had to undergo extensive physical and mental exams for this trip's insurance policies. I heard a scream.
Look, I'm not denying that, Richard. But what do we do about it?
Eleanor, the chief translator, asked.
I guess, I began.
I guess we just wait and see what happens. Go about our job.
That's reasonable.
Jim nodded.
Okay, guys, let's get back to it.
I tried to ignore what had happened as we kept walking on. All around me, the extended expedition team was working, lighting the space with work lamps as the walls and hieroglyphics on them could be photographed and translated. Each wall had been beautifully painted in painstaking fashion. I couldn't wait to get back to base and have a better look at them. As we headed down further towards the burial chamber, I could feel it getting colder still. The work lights illuminated parts of the hieroglyphics that seemed to go on forever. But eventually, we reached the burial chamber, and with that, the team was in position. The excitement practically filled the dusty air.
All right, everyone, Victor said. You know what to do.
And they went right to it, carefully scraping and chiseling their way through the burial chamber's seal. When it gave way after about 5 minutes of careful work, they gingerly guided the heavy wooden doors open. As they opened noisily, the beams from our flashlights found gold and other treasures shrouded amongst dense clouds of dust and cobwebs. Carefully stepping inside, our flashlights all found the center of the room, where a gargantuan tanstone sarcophagus filled the space. None of us spoke because we were beyond thrilled. This is what every single person in my field hopes to do once in their career. At some point, I watched Jim as he clicked away. His glasses were hanging off of his nose as he tried to capture every angle in view. While he did that, I took in the space as the rest of the crew came in and began to excavate and survey the chamber. Moments later, a few extra crew members came down to open the sarcophagus. Equipped it with state-of-the-art tools, they carefully pried the massive lid off the sarcophagus and lifted the gleaming gold mummy case out of the bottom, all in full view of Jim and a cameraman, who were duly recording everything. I felt so many emotions in that moment. This was something I had worked for years, but my watch told me it was time to take a break. On the back wall to base, the sun was out in full force, and it blasted us with heat the minute we stepped out of the tomb. As I stepped further away, I could feel the adrenaline that had been humming in my system slowly simmering down, and all thoughts of the disembodied scream were forced out of my head as we sat down to a lavish meal catered by Thornton to celebrate. The lunch was filled with everything you could possibly want, and everyone ate plenty. When it was over, we all gathered at the off-site storage facility where the mummy had been brought after it had been excavated. With the atmosphere like someone opening a highly anticipated Christmas present, Thornton, a short, gaunt man in his mid-50s, with a rapidly receding hairline, took center stage as he watched a few crewmen carefully open the mummy case. It opened with a faint pop. But when the case lid was removed, everyone took a collective gasp. It was empty. All of us stood there dumbfounded, unsure of what to do. After a painfully long minute, Thornton turned to me.
"What is this, Richard?"
"I don't know, Elliot. Maybe this is a decoy mummy case. Or maybe the body was stolen before the burial. We still have a bunch more of the tomb to explore."
"Right. Well, let me know what you find."
He turned on his heel and left without another word. Immediately after this, I led the head members of my crew back to the tomb to try to figure out what the empty mummy case meant. We walked silently through the corridors until we rounded a corner,
and found a small alcove we hadn't seen yet. I shined my flashlight down and got the second shock of the day. Lying on the tomb floor was what looked like clothing from the last century. I had no idea how old they were, but they were ragged and they were all torn, ripped, and in horrible condition. The shoes were the only things that gave away how old the clothing could have been. The five members of the crew all silently looked at the sight before we all looked at each other. I could feel the questions, but no one seemed able to actually say the words out loud. Then, as we were about to go back and report what we had found, I heard footsteps steadily approaching from out of sight. The footsteps were soft, far different from the heavy, non-nonsense stride of anyone in the crew. But they were steady and slowly approaching us. We all stood there, transfixed on the doorway, waiting to see. With each step, I could feel my hands tightening into fists as we kept our flashlights aimed at whoever was coming our way. I took a deep breath and braced myself when the footsteps were just outside the passageway. The tension in the group was unbearable. Then, the sound stopped just inside the doorway. There was no one there. No figure, no mummy, no anything. We all began to shine our flashlights in different directions, trying to figure out what was going on. "Look!" Eleanor pointed at the wall with one shaking hand. When we all pointed our flashlights at the wall, everyone saw a disembodied shadow that belonged to nothing and no one. It was slender with long limbs.
"What the?"
Jim tried to say before the footsteps started coming towards us again. But this time, we could see the shadow on the wall moving along with the footsteps.
"Run!"
Victor screamed. We all immediately agreed and ran down the other end of the passage. There was none of our lighting equipment down here, so the entire space was cast into shadow. Our shoes crashed loudly on the stone floor as we ran, and each new shadow filled me with terror. The lavish hieroglyphics whizzed by in an indecipherable blur. Everyone in the crew kept running through hallways and corridors until we were far away from the area we knew. My stomach lurched as I realized we hadn't even properly mapped the tomb yet, so none of us had any idea where we were running. Which was a dangerous thing, even under normal circumstances. We were slowly crept along in a group formation, each of us facing a different direction, in the hope that that would protect us. The air in this part of the tomb was sour, and I thought each step one of us took might bring whatever that shadow was right towards us. Our footsteps were painfully loud on the hard floor, so each step made me wince. By now, I was soaked with sweat, so my flashlight was slick and hard to hold on to. We eventually found a new corridor that seemed to go on for a mile and managed to rest for a moment.
"What do we do?"
Jim asked once he was able to stop coughing. "We use our heads," I muttered. "Let's look around and see what's going on here." The space we were in was silent for a few minutes while we all looked around. There wasn't much in this corridor, aside from a few large statues of Anubis facing away from the passage that we had just come through and a large seal on the floor near it. "Wait a minute. Weren't there massive statues of Anubis right near the entrance of the tomb?" I looked at the group. "That's right," Eleanor nodded. "They're huge." "I think they're guarding the entrance to this place, and are here to keep something in. That might be why the mummy wasn't in the case."
"You just might be right, Galloway," Bill, the crew geologist, said.
"So if every entrance to this place is guarded by Anubis, does that mean there's an exit around here?"
"I think so. It's got to be around here somewhere."
I pointed my flashlight towards the wall. We all began poking and prodding it to find an exit. After a few long minutes, Eleanor poked a spot in the wall that creaked. The entire crew ran towards it and began the push. With some effort, it gave way, and a blast of hot air greeted us as we were face to face with a sand dune that came up to everyone's waist. The relief was palpable as we all stepped into the fresh air at once. But just as we were outside, I heard a faint thud from just inside the passage flanked by the Anubis statues. Everyone collectively turned to look, and I saw the distant shape of what looked to be a hand wrapped in ancient linens lying on the floor. Without another word, we all ran straight back to the dig headquarters and told them what we had found. Everyone sat there stunned, unable to believe what we said. But when they went back in to look for the mummy, it was exactly where we had last saw it. Then I immediately resigned from my position at the Thornton Expedition, as did everyone else who had been in the group. Thornton was a gentleman over it, and knew better than to argue with me. He didn't give up the expedition itself easy. On the flight back home, which Thornton let everyone use his private jet for, we watched live news footage of an accident that had taken place at the site that we had just resigned from. Eventually, even Thornton called it quits. Right before everyone boarded the flight home, I went to a local vendor and bought each person a statue of Anubis about the size of a lawn ornament. I didn't need to tell anyone to put it in their house by the front door. I keep mine there to this day. Aside from its actual purpose, it's a great piece of decor, and it is far more interesting than the usual coat rack. I also resigned my position as a field archaeologist and took up a university job teaching archaeology. I also was offered a position at a museum, which I accepted. But despite my new job, I know that someday, someone else will find the tomb again. History never remains buried for long.